Starting off Parshas Vayigash, it says Vayigash Elov Yehuda. So what happened in last week's Parsha was the following. Yosef, I'll give you a basic rehab of what happened over here. Yosef grabbed Binyamin and said, I want Binyamin to be my slave because he's the one that stole the silver goblet that he himself had put inside Binyamin's sack. And or not he himself, he sent in a servant to do it. And he grabbed Binyamin and ran inside the house. Although it doesn't say that straight out. It says, Vayomer, he said, this is Yosef, Chalila li me'asos zos. Chalila, that I should do such a thing to take all of you as slaves. Isha asher nimtza gvia biyado hu yali oved. The man that the cup was found in his hands, he will be my slave. That guy will be my slave. V'atem and you, the shvatim, alu l'shalom el avichan. You should go up in peace to your father. So lots of questions come up to play over here. Number one, why did Yosef do this whole thing? What the heck is wrong with him? Number two, why didn't the shvatim realize who he was? Now I realize we somewhat answered that, but let's try to get a full thing. What in the world did they, how could they not realize this white boy that's sitting on the throne of Mitzrayim in front of a bunch of black people who knew Hebrew, and his son was the interpreter? Disguise, beard, and whatever.
How do you know he was white?
Yosef would still look different. Even if it wasn't like a white boy, like an albino, still look different, Mediterranean, as opposed to black, you know? And also, what did Yosef hope to accomplish with all this? Right? So what's the shot? Yeah, what are we going to ask?
No, didn't the brothers say, whoever's sack you find in will die?
Yes.
How come that didn't come true?
Ah, very, very good question. It's asked by the Panach Raza. And the answer that they say is that they said a very, very simple thing. They said, where is it? It says, anybody who was found with him, this was found in his bag, not with him. That person should be, that's when he should die. That's the wording over there.
How old was he when they
with him? I'm sorry, Yosef was 17, and now he was a total of 22 years later. So what, 39? Yeah, 17 plus 22 is 39. So therefore, I'm glad that we're all in higher math over here. But 39 altogether, so he's 39. It's a big difference, that is true. But Yosef looked like Yaakov Avinu. So he looked like Yaakov Avinu with the beard. You're looking at Yaakov Avinu.
Yeah, but he wasn't wearing his kippah.
He's well wearing his kippah. So what does that mean?
Okay,
so everybody answers that the reason why Yosef did all this was for his dreams, to accomplish his dreams, for the dreams to be Mekayim. Because he dreamt that his 11 brothers were supposed to bow down to him. And in the second dream, he saw the Shemesh and the Oreach bowing down to him, which was Yaakov Avinu and Bilhah. So he knew that he had to be Mekayim the dreams for Yaakov and Bilhah to come down and to bow down to him. So his whole plan was to get Binyamin to stay down in Mitzrayim so that Yaakov would have to come down. And that way, Yaakov Avinu would end up coming down to Mitzrayim. So
why
listen to this. There's a crazy medrash that says that if not for the fact that Yosef was down in Mitzrayim, Yaakov Avinu was supposed to come down to Mitzrayim in chains. They were supposed to chain him up and force him down to Mitzrayim. Yosef HaTzadik had said, Yaakov Avinu. No. Yaakov Avinu was supposed to be chained and brought down to Mitzrayim by the Mitzrayim. There's going to be a massive war, and Yaakov Avinu was going to be chained up and brought down to Mitzrayim. What Yosef decided was, we don't need the war.
Well, why
we can do this without the war and bring down Yaakov Avinu.
Why did he have to do it like that, though? Why didn't he just say, I'm Yosef?
Why couldn't he say it? But that comes in the question, how in the world was he not able to tell them who he was? No, much easier thing. First of all, how would he bow down to him? It's not my kind of dream. Number two, he was not allowed to say a word. They had a cherem. A cherem was, you are not allowed to say a thing about what happened to Yosef. Yosef had to accomplish this deed of bringing down Yaakov to Mitzrayim without anyone asking what happened to him. None of the Shvatim told Yaakov Avinu what happened to Yosef.
And wouldn't Yaakov ask?
Yaakov would only ask Yosef, if it was a whole thing. If Yosef would go up to him, Yosef would say to him, listen, this is what happened. I ended up, I'm down in Mitzrayim now. The first question that Yaakov is going to ask is going to be what?
I thought you were dead.
But once he's so worried about Binyamin and whatever and everything like that, he's not going to ask the question anymore. And if he does, you can get around it. That's what he had to do. He had to get around it completely to try to get around. Okay, now, Hashem had to make it happen that way, etc., etc. Okay. I forgot. Okay. Yosef HaTzadik, he never found out exactly what happened. Yosef HaTzadik saw the Asar Rugi Malchus. He saw that there were going to be 10 people that were going to die because of the Bechor's Meisim. What he was also trying to do was trying to circumvent those Asar Sarugi Malchus to make sure that this sale of the brothers of Yosef would never happen ever again. So what were the five things that the Shvatim did to Yosef? Five things that they did to Yosef. So the first thing they did was they hated him, sinas chinam, and they spoke to him harshly. They spoke to him with a harsh dibur. Number two, they stick dogs on Yosef. They stick their dogs on Yosef. Right when it came to Dothan, they stick the dogs on him, according to Rashi. Dogs were sick on him. Number two. Number three, they threw him into the pit. Number four, they sold him to the Ishmaelim, to the Midianim, whoever it was, they sold him. Number five, they caused tsar to Yaakov Avinu. Yosef HaTzadik wanted to give them a full kapara. That full kapara would only happen when all those five sins were machaper for. So he did all five things to them. Number one, as soon as they came down, he spoke harshly. He spoke harshly on purpose so that they would all realize, that they would suddenly calling them spies and calling them liars and calling them, I don't believe you, yelling at them. That's number one. And hated them for seemingly no reason whatsoever. That's number one. Number two, he called them all meraglim. What happens to meraglim? People who speak Lashon Hara are supposed to be thrown to the
dogs.
Thus, by sticking the dogs upon him, he called them meraglim, spies, people that spoke Lashon Hara, people that spoke lies, in order for them to have the dog sicked upon him. Number three, he was thrown into a pit, so they were thrown into
jail.
And especially Shimon. Who was the guy that threw Yosef into the pit directly?
Shimon.
It was Shimon. So Shimon especially was thrown down into that pit, and Shimon himself had to stay there for three extra days. For all the extra days when the Shvatim went back to Yaakov Avinu, Shimon stayed inside there. Number four, he was sold to the Ishmaelim. So he put the money back in their sacks that they thought that they were going to be accused for stealing. And what's the halacha? If somebody's accused for stealing, he gets sold as a
slave.
So just like he got sold, they were going to think that they were going to be sold themselves. And the fifth thing was they caused sour to the father. So they did was, once again, they did something which would cause sour to the father. This whole thing, this whole deed was going to end up causing sour to the father by making everything happen, by making sure that everybody would have, by making everyone cry. But in the end, the saddest part about all this is that he tried to circumvent the Asar Arugei Malchus. They tried to circumvent those 10 Arugei Malchus. What ended up happening? In the end, he cried. And by Yath Galehem, he cried on their shoulders because he realized he wasn't able to hold it back anymore. He wanted to go through with the whole thing. And if Yaakov Avinu would have come down to Mitzrayim, he would have kept Binyam and the Shvatim went back and he would have gone through and everything would have been fine. There would have been no Asar Arugei Malchus. The full Kapara, the Asar Arugei Malchus, were the 10 people that were killed because the Shvatim sold Yosef. It never would have happened. Never would have happened and everything would have been good. That was the massive cry that he did. And thus, the words by Yath Galehem is missing, and Alehem is missing the Yud. The reason why it's missing a Yud is because of the Yud Arugei Malchus. The 10 people were the Arugei Malchus. And then also, Vayevk Alehem, listen to this wording. Vayevk, we're going to have to use a little bit of a piece of paper over here. Vayevk Alehem is Vav, Yud, Vav, Chaf, Ayin, Lamed, He, Mem. Goes like this. All we got is Bayar, Yosef, Bohem, Ki, I forgot what the next one is, Asid, Lihios, Yos, I'm sorry, the Yud, Yud, Haruge, Malchus. Yosef saw that there was going to be the Asar Arugei Malchus. That's Vayevk Alehem. And that he realized was all because of him, because he couldn't take it. He couldn't take it anymore, and he cried too early. He caused all the problems to happen. Now, why do you call them rabbis? Why spies over anything else? I realized, okay, because of the dogs and everything. Call them Bali Lashon Hara. Why call them Moroccan? So look at this. Where were the Shvatim found when they were looking for Yosef? Where were they found? Not in Shechem. When they were looking for Yosef in Mitzrayim, where were they found? What they did was, we all know the famous Medrash, that they entered into 10 different entrances inside the city. They had 10 different doors inside the city. They went inside those 10 different doors, and each one of them was supposed to have gone in, written their name down. So that Yosef HaTzadik was looking at all the names, and he saw Reuven ben Yaakov Avinu, Shimon ben, they probably didn't write Yaakov Avinu, but Shimon ben Yaakov, Levi ben Yaakov, and he saw that they all came in. So he sent out emissaries throughout all of Mitzrayim looking for them. Where did he find those 10 people? Where did he find them? What do you think? Where? Which market?
The slave market.
not in the slave market, went to the Shuk Shel Zonos, the prostitute market. All the Shvatim were in the prostitute market. Yonis and Ben Uziel says they were in a prostitute market. They were in the place, the Shuk Shel Zonos, they say. The Shuk Shel Zonos. Everybody asked, what in the world were these people doing in the Shuk Shel Zonos? The Shvatim. Not just down people, these are the Shvatim. What in the world were the Shvatim doing there? So listen to this. Why'd he call them Raglan? Something absolutely crazy. What are Meraglim? They're spies, right? If Yosef would have took Yosef, they would have gotten one good look at Yosef, and they seen a white guy, a guy who wasn't black, a guy who wasn't black like anybody else there, a guy who was a little bit lighter, a little bit lighter. He's got a son, and his son is the interpreter who knows Hebrew, who knows Hebrew. Everybody knows the famous story that this guy was sold as a slave, and then he came up and became king of Mitzrayim. Everybody knows that he was a slave who became king of Mitzrayim. Everybody knows all that. Sofnas Paneach, and everybody knew that wasn't a real name, that he wasn't a real Egyptian. It's a famous Tunkal, all Mitzrayim, and he gave everyone bris milas. Every single person in Mitzrayim had bris milas because of this guy.
They didn't know it was
you
son
can't
was
put two and two together. You can't put two and two together to realize that this guy is Yosef. You couldn't just look at him and see it looks like Yaakov Avinu. It sounds like Yaakov Avinu. Everything is wrong here. There should be Yaakov Avinu. What in the world happened over here? How in the world did they not go through? But what's the best thing that you could do? Make them stop asking questions, right? How do you make them stop asking questions? Call them spies. Because if they start asking questions, then what we say? They're spies. Why were they in the Shuk Shel Zonos? Where did Pinchas and Kalev go in Yoshua when they were checking out Yericho? Where did they stay by? They stayed by Rachav Azona. Why did they stay by Rachav Azona? It's not a good place to stay by, but this is Kalev and, Kalev and Pinchas. Why are they staying there? Because the Zonos know everything. Because all the government officials go to the Zonos. So the people that go to when you're spying, this for future reference, whenever you're trying to take over Canada, go to the Shuk Shel Zonos. And as soon as you go to the Shuk Shel Zonos, I don't mean Canada, it could be Mexico, but if you go anywhere and you're trying to take over the country, make sure you go to the Shuk Shel Zonos, because those people know everything. Those are the people who know everything about it. So they went straight to Rachav. So the Shvatim went straight to the Shuk Shel Zonos. So said Yosef to go find out about everything, because they're spies. Why did the Shvatim really go to the Shuk Shel Zonos? Because they were looking for Yosef. And Yosef, this beautiful guy who went down to the land of Znus, where do you think he'd be? Of course he's going to be in the Shuk of Zonos. Of course he's going to be with the prostitutes. This guy is going to be the king of the Zonos. There's no question he's going to be down there. So they went down there looking for him there. Yosef came up with an unbelievable excuse. Oh, you're in the Shuk Shel Zonos. Why? Must be because he came to spy it out. Once they heard they were spies, were they able to ask a single other question? As soon as they left the palace, they wanted to know a couple things. Who in the world is that kid? What in the world is this white boy doing on the throne? What happened to this guy? Maybe this guy's somebody that we know. And of course, could they ask any questions? No. Because if they would have, then everybody said, oh, you really are spies. So the best way to get them to shut up and not say anything was do that. Why couldn't they tell anyone? We knew that that's from the harem, that they weren't allowed to do anything else. But in the very, very end, we know we had to see, the point of Binyamin was to see, were they going to be just like, were they going to treat Binyamin like they did Yosef? Because look, he's the only son of Rachel that's left. Binyamin. He's obviously going to be treated differently from all the other brothers. And Yaakov, you know, for sure treated him differently. He wouldn't even let him leave the house. Are the Shvatim still jealous of him or no? So when Binyamin stole that goblet, or when they put the goblet in Binyamin's bag, Yosef was really trying to see, did the Shvatim learn their lesson? Did they learn it from Yosef? Are they going to stick up for Binyamin? And they're going to try to save Binyamin? Or are they going to give in? And just be like, all right, Binyamin's a stupid idiot. All right, we're going back. And what were they going to do? And once they started fighting for him, then he knew that they had somewhat of a kaparan that was good enough. And then when he cried, he got rid of that one thing. Yeah.
So it's not really a test, though. It's like, if you ask like a 15-year-old kid and you find out that he's jealous of his brother and that he wants to kill his brother, fine. But once that kid becomes 30, it's not a test anymore. A 30-year-old is not really jealous of his kids that are a little bit younger. So they're much older now.
He's saying that now that they're 40 years and older, that they're completely different. It's an interesting call to say that the Shvatim were young. They were 20 years old and they were jealous of somebody else. It's an interesting call to say that they were honestly jealous.
When they're 20, 18, 19, 20.
Say that about the Shvatim is kind of kafira. I pretty much say that on tape. That is kafira. All right, we're all gone. It's possibly kafira. You can't say that about the Shvatim. It wasn't like a jealousy that was just like, oh man, he got a shirt. It can't be. Like, all of a sudden they saw a Technicolor dream coat and people, every time you walk down the street, were saying it's red and yellow and blue. And like, just to say that, and like all of a sudden, like, oh man, I wish I had a shirt. Go make one. It's not that big of a deal to make a Technicolor dream coat shirt, you know? It's like, shouldn't be that hard. See, I wouldn't say that it's regular jealousy. It's got to be something a little bit more than that. But that goes all the way back into Vayeshev and what the brothers were thinking. That's another issue altogether. Now, did they know? Did the Shvatim know? I've been going up until now assuming that the Shvatim had no idea that this guy was Yosef. Says the Chidah, of course they knew. Yehuda, at least, figured it out. And he said the entire thing. Because Menashe has given them Divrei Torah. When they're speaking over with Menashe, saying, should we capture Binyamin or not? Menashe has given them Divrei Torah. Because they said, listen, we'll all be slaves to your master. And the person who stole it should be killed. Said Menashe, no. I believe there's a Gemara that says that no, just the guy who stole should be a slave, and everybody else gets to go free. I think that's a Gemara. You guys are a little bit off in your, you know, you got to go over a little bit more of your Bekiyas and Bar Metzia. You know, go over your Geneva dinner. And everything like that. They sat there and they're like, how does this guy know halacha? And now that we think about it, he's an 8-year-old kid. Where in the world did he get all this Hebrew from? He must have been a slave in our father's house. But there's no way there could be a slave in our father's house who's 8 years old and is living in Mitzrayim. There's something wrong with this. Who is this kid? They finally put two and two together and they thought, maybe it's Osnas's kid. Because remember, Osnas was the person that they threw down in Mitzrayim, Shechem and Dina's daughter. They thought maybe it was Osnas's kid. And Osnas knew a little bit of Hebrew. But still, that's weird. Osnas left them when she was 2 years old. There's no way Osnas remembered any Torah. So how is this possible for this kid to do it? All of a sudden, Yehuda started putting two and two together. Started seeing all these things together. Binyamin, by the way, was in on it the whole time. In on it the whole time. The Chidah says that Binyamin was told by Yosef HaTzadik, listen, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a cup, I'm going to put it in your sack. Don't check your sack when you leave Mitzrayim. Because of course the brothers knew. What happened the last time they left Mitzrayim? They put the money back, right? So first thing they're going to do when they left Mitzrayim this time would be what? Check their bags and make sure that there's no money in there so they don't have to get caught and sent back to Mitzrayim. So they did that. But Binyamin didn't see the cup? No, because Binyamin knew that there was supposed to be a cup inside there. When Yehuda saw what happened to Binyamin, and that Binyamin was sitting there, yes, and when Binyamin sat there and said, like, what's going on? And Binyamin said, like expecting it almost, like, oh man, I must have taken the cup. All of a sudden, Yehuda's like, what in the world is going on here? So he walked up to Yosef HaTzadik and he did one last test. And he said to Yosef, the same thing, he said, listen, you're Egyptian. The halacha is by Egyptians that everybody who's involved in a theft, everybody becomes slaves. So we'll do that, we'll all become slaves. When Yosef said, no, only the person who stole is going to become my slave, all of a sudden, Yehuda said, it's Yosef. He knows the halacha, it's Yosef. And he got very, very upset.
They all have
comes into over here. Yes, but they commented on it. But Binyamin didn't comment on it and didn't say anything about it this time. That was a major, major difference. So he comes in and he says like this. In the beginning of the parasha, I'm going to tell you guys over one of the craziest midrashim, but I'm going to interrupt it in the middle, and then I'm going to continue the crazy midrash, because we have to understand something right in the middle. Vayomer Chalili, etc. After Yosef said his whole thing, Yosef got up, grabbed Binyamin, and ran inside his palace and slammed the door. Vayigash Elav Yehuda, Yehuda approached. It's not just an approaching of like, hey, how you doing? My name's Yehuda. Hey, how's everything going? He slammed open the doors, knocked it down with his crazy strength, knocked open the doors completely, and jumped inside the palace to go up and make sure that everybody knows that he's the guy who's going to be in charge. He says, Vayomer, Bi Aduni. You know who my master is? He's B. He's among me. Beis Yud is Yud Beis. He's part of the 12 Shvatim. I know my master is one of the 12 Shvatim. I know exactly who you are. You want to know who stole the cup? Yedaber Na Avdecha. Let your servant tell you, because your servant is the one that put it inside Binyamin's sack, and I know your servant put it inside the sack. This is all big setup. Don't be angry at anybody else. And if you want, right now, I'm going to start off with you, I'm going to end off with Paro, I'm going to kill every single person that's left in Mitzrayim. Yehuda goes ahead and says, I'm going to kill every single person that's in Mitzrayim. Now, before we get into the massive, massive metrics that's going to go absolutely crazy, and which quotes down everything that's going on here, we have to understand something. This fight between Yehuda and Yosef is not a stump fight. The Malachim and Shemayim called out, hey, you guys want to see a lion fight an ox? Because the lion is Yehuda and the ox is Yosef. And they're like, yeah! And they started going around like it was a ring, you know, and you hear like a guy, are you ready to rumble? You have the guy going down there, and all of a sudden, like, all the Malachim are coming to watch this lion fight ashore. You know, everybody, one lion fighting ashore. What's going on? What in the world is the Machlokas over here? Here we go. It's not only a physical fight. It's a crazy, crazy spiritual fight. Yosef and Yehuda stand for two massive ideologies. Yosef's ideology is to be for beauty. absolute beauty. To be everything to be good. For there to be no problem on the outside. For the aesthetics to be perfect. Never sin. Did Yosef sin with Eishes Potiphar? No, absolutely nothing. To hold yourself back, to knock down your taiva. To never be in the middle. Either be the biggest tzaddik that there is out there, or to be the biggest Russia that there is out there. To go all the way up and become the king, or to be an eved the entire time. To be in jail, to be an eved of Potiphar, to be thrown into a pit. Think of Yosef's life. He's on top of the world by being Yaakov's favorite son, thrown into a pit and then sold as an eved, then had to go to jail. Then he's all the way up on top again as Paro's king, and he remains the king for the rest of his life. He's all the way up on top, all the way on the bottom, all the way up on top. That's Yosef. Yehuda is totally different. Yehuda is work your way slowly up the ladder. Bring yourself up. He's about tshuva. He did a chait. He did something that looks like a chait on the outside, and he did tshuva for it, and worked his way back up the ladder to make himself right, to make everything better. He's about tshuva. Yosef made fun of him. What do you have to do tshuva for? Don't sin in the first place. The ideologies were totally different. What looks better, Yosef or Yehuda? On the outside, what looks better? Yehuda? I'll say for sure Yosef. Yosef looks a lot better. He's the guy who never sinned. Oh. He didn't do anything. But about tshuva is more realistic. It's a more realistic goal. What they were arguing about was Malchus Yehuda versus Malchus Yisrael. What should be the kingdom of Bnei Yisrael? Should it be a Malchus Yehuda in which we build our way up and we slowly but surely build our way up to a tremendous thing? We might sin. We might bring ourselves down. We might have a Bnei Zmanim where we go down a little bit. But then we bring ourselves right back up there and it brings us higher than we were before. That was Yehuda's ideal. But Yosef was not that. Never sin. Only do good. And if you only do good, everything will be fine. But when you do bad, yeah, it's gonna be hell. That's gonna be hell. You're gonna have to go all the way down. You're gonna be knocked down all the way down, and it's gonna be almost impossible to bring yourself all the way back up. It's gonna be really, really hard. But that's Yosef versus Yehuda. They each had their ideals, and they both said Yosef's way was tremendous, but it led to Yeravam. Yeravam ben Nevat, who was the first king of Malchus Yisrael, who's from Menashe, ended up doing what? Creating
golden idols.
Golden idols. The Egel Azov. The Egel Azov. Where did the Egel Azov come from, by the way? How did it start? Because Micha threw in a little golden tablet that said on it, Ale Shur. What was that tablet used for before this? To bring up Yosef's bones out of the Nile River. There's a connection between the shore and Yosef
and
the Egel Azov. To the Egel Azov. Yeravam ben Nevat was also that way. He was all the way on top of the world, tremendous. To which HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Yeravam ben Nevat, if you're with me, you and David HaMelech will walk with me in Gan Eden. To which Yeravam said, who's first, me or David? Which one's first? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, David's going to be first. Yeravam said, forget it, I don't want it. He went from all the way up there to all the way down. He can't be middle. He can't be middle ground. I'm not going to be second. I have to be first. If I'm not first, I don't want it. That's what Yosef is all about. That's why people got swayed. That's what Yavan was all about. The Misyavnim, the guys who were with the Yavanim. Because on the outside, there were beauty. There was tremendous things. But they thought that that was the way that you should rule your life. Said Yehuda, no, don't do that. Don't do that. If you don't live with tshuva, you're never going to be able to lead yourself back. That's Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. Mashiach ben Yosef is eventually going to falter. He's not going to win. Mashiach ben Yosef is going to build the base of Mikdash. He's going to make things tremendous for us. It's going to look great on the outside. But on the inside, it's not going to work. You need Mashiach ben David to come at the end. You need Malchus Yehuda to come at the very end. Now that we have all that, that's the shore versus the Aryeh. The Aryeh is the roarer. The shore is the guy who gores and makes sure everybody goes down. It's the Egel versus doing tshuva versus sinning in the first place. Okay, ready? Yosef heard from Yehuda. Yehuda went up and he said, here's the Medrash. The Medrash says, Yehuda said, do you know who I am? Do you know who we are? Us 12 Shvatim, us 10 Shvatim altogether, me and the 11 other guys, the 10 other guys with me. Do you know who we are? Maybe you've met Shimon and Levi. They took out all of Shechem, 24,000 people in a single day. Maybe you heard of them. Milchemes Bnei Yaakov, like we went over. Milchemes Bnei Yaakov, the massive war between the Bnei Yaakov and all the people of Eretz Canaan, in which they killed over 300,000 people. You heard of us? Sarah came down to Mitzrayim. What happened to her when Paro tried to touch her? Immediately he got Makos on himself. Maybe you've never heard of us. We're more powerful than you can ever imagine. We're going to start off with you. We're going to end off with Paro. We're going to kill every single person in Mitzrayim. Said Yosef, take out your sword and I'll kill you. you. Take out your sword and I'll kill you. Now be very careful with the following words. Don't say this medrash without translating and saying what the explanation is. And I will translate and I'll tell you the explanation in the end. Said Yehuda, we know it's not from Hashem. It's not Mida Keneged Mida anymore because Binyamin was never involved in the first place. So we know that it's all from you. So said Yosef, I got a good idea. Say that Binyamin was killed. Here, do you need 20 shekel? I'll give you 20 shekel. Say he was killed. You'll make some money off it, just like you did with your previous brother, with Yosef. That's what he said to Yehuda. That's what he said to him. Said Yehuda, I've got the fire of Shechem burning inside me, and I'm going to destroy all of Mitzrayim. Said Yosef, that's the fire of Tamar burning inside you. It's the fire of Tamar that's burning inside you. You got the wrong fire. Said Yehuda, I'm going to make the streets run with blood. Said Yosef, oh good. You can have a great place to dip Binyamin's coat. Good lines. Good lines. He learned a little bit in Mitzrayim, you know? He's got some great lines going over here. Now, Yehuda grabbed a 400 shekel stone. 400 shekel stone, huge amount of weight. Threw it up in the air and caught it with his other arm. Caught it with his other hand. Caught it down. And put it down to the ground. Yosef did a little motion to Menashe. And Menashe, 8-year-old kid, kicked a massive pillar of marble in the middle of the palace, and it crumbled down to the ground into a bunch of little rocks on the ground, a bunch of pebbles. So all the Shvatim started looking at each other and said, there's no way that kid could do that if he's not one of the Shvatim. If he's not one of the Shvatim. Who in the world is this kid? So Yehuda calmed down a little bit. So he calmed down. And the next Pasuk in Pasuk Yutes, and he went through the whole story, going through everything. But at the very end, he started building himself up again. And he said, V'achiv Mace, his brother is dead, thinking that Yosef is a Russia now, going up against them. His brother is dead, he's like a Russia, and he's completely gone. At the very end, in the entire parak, he works himself up to the point where a single hair in the chest of Yehuda burst through his armor, went through his armor, and pierced its way all the way through. So that you could see the hair piercing through his armor all the way through. And then he ran up, and he yelled out to Naphtali, Naphtali, go run and count all the different marketplaces that there are in Mitzrayim. Go run and count them all. So Naphtali was like, got it. Comes back. There's 12. I'll explain everything. Don't worry. There's 12. So Yehuda said, okay, you 9, Sepinyamin, you stay here. You 9 guys, you take, each one of you take one shuk. Each one of you take one shuk. I'm going to take 3. And we're going to go and we're going to destroy all of Mitzrayim right now. Yosef crumbled another pillar to dust. You've got to wonder how this place is still standing. But he crumbled another pillar to dust and he said, that's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want you to keep destroying things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want to do that. The Shvatim agreed with Yosef and said to Yehuda, no, we shouldn't do it. Said Yehuda, no, absolutely not. We're doing it L'Shem Shemayim. It's mutter to kill all of Mitzrayim. We're destroying all of Mitzrayim right now. And Shimon was unsure. Shimon wasn't sure which side to be on. Binyamin, silent. Menashe, meanwhile, had gone and brought in 10,000 swordsmen, 500 horsemen, and 400 SWAT guys. Those guys to come inside to go take care of the Shvatim. Yehuda looked up at them and roared. This isn't a regular roar. This is using his Kabbalah. We know that he knew Sefer Yetzirah. He mustama knew some type of Kabbalah. He roared. Now here's what happened. The guys in the front row, their heads turned around completely and faced the other way. The guys who were right in the middle all died. The guys who were all the way in the back ran away. They all ran away. Now listen to this. 4 aftermaths. Number 1, all the women in all of Mitzrayim miscarried. They all lost their baby. Number 2, Pisom and Ramses both fell. The cities of Pisom and Ramses both fell. Number 3, Paro, who remember he's only a foot tall, fell off his throne and landed on the ground and sent a message to Yosef. What the heck are you doing? Cut them go. Give them their brother. That was Paro. Number 4, Hushim ben Dun, whose death heard it from Eretz to Canaan and ran inside and said, Yehuda, did you call? Came inside and said, Yehuda, you called me. Hushim ben Dun ran inside. All of a sudden, Paro sent the shluchim in. Menashe ran up to Yehuda after Yehuda made this roar, touched him on the shoulder, I don't know, maybe the Vulcan neck pinch or something, and silenced Yehuda and made Yehuda stop. And again, Yehuda said, I don't know who this kid is. I have no idea who this kid is. This is absolutely crazy. I don't know what to do. Yosef turned up to them and said, kicked everybody else out of the room, all the Mitzrayim out of the room, except for him and Menashe, and he turned everybody out, and he said to him, listen, fine, I'll give you back Binyamin, but you have to give me your other brother. You have to give me Yosef. So Yehuda got so upset, the hair was still sticking out of his armor, got so upset, he started bleeding tears. Blood was pouring out of his eyes, and his skin started shaving off like copper, crying on the ground. Shimon looked up at him and screamed at him, how stupid are you? We've told you, we don't know where Yosef is. So Yosef called out and said to them, Yosef's standing right here in this room. And he called out, Yosef, come in, Yosef, come in. All the Shvatim are looking all around. Then Yosef turned to them and said, in Lashon HaKodesh, not just Ivrit, not just Egyptian or anything, in Lashon HaKodesh, Ani Yosef Oda Vichai, with the 10,000 different Pshatim and the Gematrias and the Notrikons and everything that there is involved in Ani Yosef Oda Vichai, all the different Pshatim that you have. The Shvatim heard it and were so shocked by everything, they immediately died. Every single one of them died. Kadosh Baruch Hu brought by Gavriel HaMalach. Gavriel HaMalach gave them Tchias HaMesim, and immediately, as soon as they had Tchias HaMesim, they ran toward Yosef to kill him. Another Malach came, scattered them to all the different corners of the room, and Yosef HaTzadik said to them, Geshuna Eli, approach to me, come, I'm going to explain to you what just happened. That's what he told them. I'm going to explain to you everything that just happened. Now, based on what we just said, this entire Midrash is the most unbelievable Midrash you've ever heard. Binyamin is the future kingdom. Who is the first king in Klal Yisrael?
Shaul.
Why was Binyamin the first king? I thought Yehuda was supposed to be the king. Or at least Yosef. Not Binyamin. Who's Binyamin? Binyamin is a starter. He's a Pesach. He's the door opening to everything in Klal Yisrael. It's a tremendous thing that Binyamin has of the tzaddik who sits there and is absolutely silent, the guy with no sins whatsoever. Tremendous power that Binyamin has. Yehuda wants him on his side. Yosef wants him on his side. And they're both fighting. Who's Binyamin going to be the prelude to? Malchus Beis Yehuda or Malchus Beis Yosef? Which one is it going to be the prelude to? And that's what the fight is all about, and that's what the Malachim came down to go here. They start fighting about that. Yosef is demeaning Yehuda. He says, we should go to you. You're a Baal Tshuva. That means you did a sin. You want Binyamin, the guy who's never done a sin before, to go to a guy with sins? Why should he go to you? He should go to me. I'm the guy who's never sinned before. I'm the guy who's all the way up on top. I'm the king. I'm the guy that should be in charge. Why should he go to you? To which Yehuda picked up a 400 shekel stone and threw it up in the air. And that's what Yosef was saying to him, giving all those lines. You dipped the coat in the blood. You had the fire of Tamar. You sold your brother. All the sins that they did. And even though Yehuda did tremendous tshuva for it, but you're a Baal Tshuva. You're a nobody. Who are you? That's what Yosef claimed. Yehuda picked up the 400 shekel stone, threw it up in the air. 400 is the Koach HaTumah. Saying to Yosef, yeah, but if you expect every person in Klal Yisrael to follow your way of not sinning, and if you sin, you're out of Klal Yisrael, then you guys are going to be messed over. You guys are going to be full of tumah within the first year. There's no way that you can expect the majority of people to follow you, Yosef. It's never going to happen. People are going to mess it up. There's going to be massive problems. Yosef, they can't act like you. Pick up that 400 shekel thing. Menashe came along and knocked down the pillar. Says Yehuda, this guy has power. He didn't realize that Malchus Beis Yosef also has a tremendous power. Maybe it should be Malchus Beis Yosef. Yehuda stands back a little bit and thinks about it. Maybe Malchus Beis Yosef is the way to go. I don't know. Maybe it is the right way. He stands back and he lets everything go out. Finally, he turns to Naphtali and he tells him, all right, Naphtali, we got to make this decision right now. Let's figure out who's going to be on whose side. They find the 12 shooks and Yosef says, don't do it. You shouldn't destroy Mitzrayim. 9 Shvatim agree with Yosef. 3 Shvatim agree with Yehuda. Because Malchus Yehuda is which Shvatim? Yehuda, Binyamin, and Naphtali. Not Naphtali, Shimon. Shimon is all the way on Yehuda's side because Shimon was still in between, not knowing what to do. All the other Shvatim went on the side of Yosef. All the other Shvatim, that's 9 and 3. You guys take 9, I'll take 3, says Yehuda. I'll take 3 of them altogether and I'll finish off everything. What else happened? Hold on 1 second. Right. Paro sent the shluchim and everything. Everything came down. The hair that came out was the Melech Poritz Geder. The Melech Poritz Geder. As soon as Yehuda started seeing as he was speaking through, that the hair came out through his armor, he realized Hamelech Poritz Geder, that a Melech makes his own way and goes his own way and tries to fight in any way possible. As soon as he saw that a Kadosh Baruch Hu was masking to him, that the hair started going through, he started going up against Yosef again. And he said, it's time, I see that you're going to end up having the Egel. And Shimon agreed with him completely. All the other Shvatim went to the other side. Sorry. He called out, and who came by from Eretz Canaan? I'm moving my breath. Sorry. I need a drink very quickly. But Chushim ben Dan. Switch around the name of Chushim. What letters did you come out with? Take out the Vav, because there's no Vav in Chushim. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyah Bidbaro. Mashiach came to Yehuda's side. As soon as he saw Chushim, which was Mashiach, come over to Yehuda's side, he realized, I'm all good. So what happened in the very end? Yosef remained king of Mitzrayim. Yosef agreed, I'm going to be in the Mefarnes. I'll take care of the Parnassa and Klal Yisrael. I'll take care of all the other Shvatim. But Yehuda was going to be what? The Rosh Yeshiva. Who was sent ahead to start the Yeshiva in Goshen? Yehuda. What's the city of Goshen called in the Torah? Goshna. Gimel Shin Nun He is Gematria of?
358
is the same Gematria as Mashiach. And it's the four different exiles that Yehuda led us out of. Goshna is supposed to stand for Gimel. It's Gimel, Shin, Nun, and Hey. Gimel is Guf, Shin is Simcha, Nun is Neshama, Hey is Hakol. The Guf was Meshabed. The Guf was destroyed in what goes? We're slaves in
Mitzrayim.
The Neshama, Simcha. Where do we lose our Simcha? By going into Golus Babel. By the first place of Mikdash being destroyed, we lost all our Simcha. That's Al Naros Babel. Sham Yashavnu Gam Bachinu B'Zachrenu Asiyon. We cried over the destruction of the first place of Mikdash. Number three, the Neshama. In Yavan, we lost our Neshama. That's what they wanted us to do. They wanted us to lose our spirituality. And Hey is Edom. That's Hakol.
Everything
was all put together. Once he saw that, they realized that everything was going to be okay. Quick Rashi. Mem Hei Gimel. There's a Maskul Adavid that says, all the brothers were Nipalu Mipanav. When it says Nipalu Mipanav, they were all scared of him. It says in Pasuk, Mem Hei Gimel. The Pasuk says, Rashi says, because of the embarrassment. I'm sure you've heard of this vort before, but it's one of those famous Shabbos vorts that you can say at the table so that everybody doesn't have to worry about saying the entire medrash over, and everybody's there like, when are you done? You know, something like that. But mipnei abusha. What does Rashi mean by that? Because of the embarrassment? Absolute unbelievable vort. Says Maskul David. Rabbi Elazar says, from this mice of the Shvatim with Yosef, oylanu miyom adin. Woe to us from the Yom Adin. For when we go up to Shemayim and HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to us, woe to us what's going to be when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees us and sees what's going to be. If they weren't able to figure out that that was Yosef, it's going to be the exact same thing by us. When we go up to Shemayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to appear to us, and he's going to say to us, we're going to say, like, well, I never knew that I was supposed to do that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to show you, like, I gave you a piece of paper that floated down from the sky, landed in front of you, and said, you should do this. Go to YU. It's from Alpha. I don't know, just figure out something, you know, like, go to, I don't know, something, and do the following. You had these signs that were sent there. You missed them completely. You weren't looking for them, so you missed them. Can you imagine what the Shvatim felt like when they looked at him and they're like, oh my God, it's Yosef. Well, that was really stupid of us. We probably should have figured that out in the first place. Him being a white boy and everything, speaking Hebrew.
Looking like
having his son being 8 years old looks exactly like Yaakov Avinu. He's sitting there, you'd think to yourself like they would have put two and two together. But no, at the very end, they had no idea. They're sitting there like, oh my gosh, we totally missed it. Because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to miss something, you miss it. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to not see it, you don't see it. That's what happened with the Shvatim. But in the end, it's the most embarrassing thing in the world. Because you look at that and you're like, how did I not see that? How did I not see Yosef? How did I not see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted me to do that? How did I miss that? And in the very end, that's supposed to be the Pshat, says the Ben Ishchai in Gan Eden. That there are going to be people ask the Ben Ishchai in Sod Yesharim. They ask him, where's Gan Eden? Where is this place Gan Eden? He said, there's a Gan Eden on earth. Where's the door? How come we've been through the entire world and we can't find the door? Says the Ben Ish Chai, number one, we haven't been through everywhere in the world. There could very well be a place in the world that we haven't been to where there is a place and we just haven't seen it yet. Number two, he says, it's probably right there in front of your eyes and you're not looking at it. You're not looking at it. Just to compare, it's like in Harry Potter, where no one can see the magicians doing all that they're doing. Nobody sees the door. Nobody sees to go in there. Nobody sees all this or anything. You just pass it right by. Lahavdil. We'll just try to separate that from what we're talking about over here. But it's the exact same type of concept. The concept is, you're missing it. The door to Gan Eden is right there behind that beam. But nobody ever stands there. Because everybody's like, oh, I don't see anything there. There's going to be some error who's sitting there in Hebron. And all of a sudden, Mashiach's going to come down. And right there in Hebron, there's a door to Gan Eden. It's going to be right there in the heir's backyard. And all of a sudden, he's going to see like crazy amounts of fruit orchards and crazy things and all these tremendous things right in his backyard. He's going to look there and be like, oh, geez, I really should have sold this land. Like, something really stupid where you're going to look at him and you're going to be like, what in the world just happened? How in the world did I miss that? How did I not see that? That's what it's going to be like. And we're going to come to the very end and you're going to realize it's the embarrassment. And that's what happened over here, and that's what we're supposed to take a lesson from. Even Abusha, they were frightened. The Shvatim couldn't talk to Yosef because they were so embarrassed that they weren't able to figure out until now. It's the same exact way by us with the Kaddish Baruch. There's that. All right, yeah.
Are you going to get punished for breaking this promise?
Yeah.
We didn't go into that today.
Yeah, Moshe died.
100%. Moshe had to daven for Yehuda in order to go into Olam Haba. Yehuda was not allowed in Olam Haba. Not only that, but we know that tzaddikim, they never rot. They don't turn into bones. But they say that Yehuda's bones were rattling in his cover, which means he rotted. He rotted until Moshe Rabbeinu prayed for him.
So why didn't
there has to be something. So what happened with Yehuda? How did Yehuda not break his promise? So the Ritva in Makos and Yudal from Abez says that he never brought Binyamin back. Never brought Binyamin back. You see that he brought 10 donkeys back. 10 donkeys are for the 10 Shvatim. But Binyamin, everybody was scared, stay back in Mitzrayim, because if he goes on a trip again, who knows what's going to happen to him. So they all said, Binyamin, stay back in Mitzrayim. Stay there in Mitzrayim and don't move anywhere. But the problem is that Yehuda thought that was Makayim's promise, because eventually he brought Yaakov to Binyamin. But that wasn't the promise. The promise was to bring Binyamin to Yaakov, and he never did that. That's number one. That's the Ritva's opinion. The Migdalos is an unreal thing. Mida Kenegi Mida, Migdalos says, and this is my added shot to the Migdalos, but he says, for some reason, Yehuda forgot. And he forgot to matur his cheren. Forgot to get rid of his cheren. So did Yaakov. They all forgot. He brought back Binyamin. But a cheren from a tzaddik goes through, even if he didn't say anything. Even if he, you know, if he fulfilled his promise. A cheren of a tzaddik goes through anyway. So even though putting himself in cheren, excommunicating himself, should happen anyway. Says in Migdalos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made him forget. Listen to this Mida Kenegi Mida. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made him forget because of what happened with Yehuda and Tamar. What happened by Tamar? He married her off to Er and then Ona, right? What did he say to Tamar after that?
I want my third son.
What?
I want my third son.
It's not what he said. What did he say?
Your first?
Oh, go wait over there.
Go wait? What?
I'll find you later.
Go back to your father's house and wait until my youngest son comes of age, right? She waited.
She forgot about him.
And he totally, not, he made himself forget about her and said, I don't want to marry him off to Tamar because I'm afraid of what's going to happen to Shelah. So he refused to marry him off to Tamar. That's what ended up happening with Yehuda. Mida Kenegan Mida. He was punished for everything that happened with Tamar with embarrassment at that moment. But there was another Mida. He had to somehow forget something that he should have remembered. Just like he forgot to give Shelah to Tamar, he had to forget something that he should have remembered. What was that thing that he forgot that he should have remembered? His very own chair. Putting himself in excommunication. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mida Kenegan Mida made him forget. To the point where he was sitting there and he couldn't remember. And nobody remembered. Nobody remembered. And everybody sat there and thought that he was going to be able to be in Olam Haba. What?
Where's your input?
That's mine. That it was. He just says Mida Kenegan Mida. He doesn't say what the Mida Kenegan Mida is. I say the Mida Kenegan Mida is the forgetting of Tamar. And that's the Mida Kenegan Mida of him forgetting to take himself out of Khair.
So Khair means what?
Excommunicated. Not allowed to be in Olam Haba.
Yeah.
In the end, Moshe Rabbeinu davened for him and brought him in. Raised up his bones. All right, guys, we're going to stop with